January 9th, 1909. Ernest Shackleton groans as he trudges through the hard-packed snow. A bitter headwind cuts through his jacket, freezing his breath and numbing his hands. The temperature is minus 19 degrees, cold by any standards, but with the wind chill, it's closer to minus 50. Shackleton's feet and ears are covered with blisters and the black char of frostbite. He's weakened by hunger and head-splitting altitude sickness. He and his crew have trekked over 700 miles south across the vast expanse of Antarctic snow. Their goal is to reach beyond the known world and be the first humans to ever reach the South Pole, an expedition the public have been calling the Nimrod, after the name of his ship. Their journey has taken almost 2.5 months. Still before them, an endless white plateau of snow and ice. The pole is out there, somewhere. Shackleton has been on this continent once before, 6 years ago. It was his first Antarctic expedition, under the leadership of Captain Robert Scott. Scott was brooding and temperamental. He ruled by bullying and absolute authority. Shackleton was the opposite. He was optimistic, open, and warm. As conditions grew more difficult on that 8-month journey, the tension was thick. When frostbite and low rations slowed them to a crawl, Scott yelled, "Keep going, you bloody fools!" But they turned back from the pole, nearly 500 miles out. By the time Shackleton got back to the ship, he was coughing up blood. Now he has another shot. This time he is leading a 4-man crew, and he isn't going to make Scott's mistakes. But the last month has been slow going. He looks at his men's haggard faces. For weeks now, they've had little to eat. Their feet and hands are numb. The wind doesn't help. It's relentless. Sudden gusts blow up to 80 miles an hour like a kick in the gut. Each night, the icy gales whip into the tent as they shiver inside their wet bags. They've hardly slept in the last 3 days, and whiteout blizzards slow them to a crawl. But still, they push on. They know what's at stake. The British Empire is counting on them. Shackleton needs to show the world, and more importantly, himself, that this time he can make it to the South Pole. Shackleton checks his compass for his bearings. If his calculations are right, they are still 97 nautical miles away from the pole. At this pace, that's at least 2 more weeks. They don't have enough food to get there and back. Frank Wilde sees the look on his face. "What are you thinking, boss?" Wilde is his second in command, a small man who's incredibly strong, but now his cheeks are blue from the cold. He looks exhausted. Time to take out the flag. Frank opens his bag and hands him the Union Jack. The silk feels surprisingly heavy in his hands. Shackleton manages a smile.
"Go ahead, Frank."
Shackleton watches Frank stab the flag deep in the snow. Then he clears his throat. "I hereby take possession of this area for the British Empire." One of the men fires the trigger of a camera. It's proof they've made it this far. Whatever regrets Shackleton has for not making it all the way, he knows at least they've done their best, and he's kept his men safe. Then, for the first time in nearly 3 months, the men turn north to head home. As they walk, Shackleton makes a silent promise. Once he's paid off his debt for this trip, he'll put together another crew. He'll be back. He's going to do whatever it takes to conquer Antarctica.
You already know that Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. But did you know that they have a new collection of exclusive thrillers? Featuring captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances, you'll be kept on the edge of your seat for sure. One Audible original I'm excited to listen to is The Gray Man by Mark Greaney. It's about a former CIA operative that's now a killer for hire. The Gray Man has also been adapted into a Netflix film, so I know it's going to be good. Listen along. As an Audible member, you get one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/theodds or text the odds to 500-500. That's audible.com/theodds or text the odds to 500-500.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From Wondery, I'm Cassie DePeckel, and this is Against the Odds. It was called the heroic age of polar exploration when countries around the world competed to be the first to reach Antarctica and the poles. It was a new continent untouched by humanity that only the most adventurous men dared to explore. Men who yearned to be the first to see what no other person had. Perhaps the most famous was Ernest Shackleton. His two attempts at the pole were legendary. But it was his third mission to the icy continent that would define him. Known simply as the Endurance, it is one of the most heroic true stories in history. It would capture the imagination of the next generations who dreamed of exploring continents unknown. One of those men was Henry Worsley, a distant relative of Frank Worsley, the captain of the Endurance crew. Henry was a 48-year-old lieutenant colonel in the British Army who wondered if he had what it took to reach the South Pole. In 2008, exactly 100 years after Shackleton's failed attempt, he would get his chance to find out. This is the story of two men on two separate journeys, linked through time by a love for adventure, a desire to test themselves, and the call of the wild. It's an epic story of survival and the challenges of becoming a true leader of men. This is episode one, Obsession. It's March 1914. Shackleton lights a gas lamp in his office and sighs. It's going to be another late night. Since announcing his new expedition 3 months ago, he's been inundated with applications from potential crew members. Over 5,000 letters in all. It's been more than 5 years since his Nimrod expedition had to turn back from the South Pole. When he returned, it was hard to get used to the hustle of the city, but he had no choice. He was wildly in debt from the trip. Since then, he's done whatever he can to pay it back. First, there was the mining operation that didn't pan out. Then a slate of lecture tours. He still does those. And a company called the Tabard Cigarette and Tobacco, which he still has. But adding up numbers in a dark room left him empty. He couldn't stop dreaming about the blue ice of Antarctica, the white expanses, the way the particles of snow dance in the air like fairy dust. He just had to go back to try again. But then the news came. Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen had reached the pole. The race was over. At first, it was a crushing blow, but Shackleton quickly regrouped. There were still parts of the great continent that had never been explored. That was how he arrived at his new mission. A transcontinental journey from sea to sea and then 1,700 miles on foot across an unknown icecape of Antarctica.
It's never been done, and it will be expensive. He'll need a ship and a crew and supplies. He writes a letter to all potential investors. From the sentimental point of view, it is the last great polar journey that can be made. It will be a greater journey than the journey to the pole and back, and I feel it is up to the British nation to accomplish this, for we have been beaten at the conquest of the North and South Pole. There now remains the largest and most striking of all journeys, the crossing of the continent. It's a daring mission, which is why the crew needs to be special, different. They will be living together for nearly 6 months under stressful and unknown conditions. They all need an adventurous spirit. They'll need optimism and patience and an even temperament and courage. Without courage, they're lost. Shackleton sorts the 5,000 applications into three piles: possible, hopeless, and mad. The interview process for candidates is unconventional. There are no forms to fill out or resumes to submit. Some of the questions Shackleton asks don't even seem to relate to the job. He asks one man if he has good teeth. Another, he asks if he can sing.
You don't have to be an opera singer, but can you shout with the boys?
Some, he hardly asks anything at all.
You look funny, he tells one. You're hired.
He works on gut instinct. He's managed to fill several of the positions this way. His cook, a carpenter, four renowned scientists. His best hire so far is the trip photographer, an Australian named Frank Hurley. Hurley traveled with another explorer to Antarctica and captured incredible images. But he still needs to fill the most important role, the ship's captain. It's 4 a.m. when he hears a soft tap on his door.
Sir Ernest Shackleton?
Yes, come in.
Frank Worsley, at your service.
Shackleton motions for him to have a seat and examines him closely.
How old are you?
42, sir.
Shackleton's surprised. The man looks much younger, but there's something about his face that he likes.
Did you send me a letter?
No, sir. I decided to come in person, right after the dream.
The dream?
Worsley becomes animated, flailing his hands and speaking in bursts.
I dreamed last night that I was steering a ship down this very street, but it was covered in water and icebergs. But I was sailing right through it. As soon as I woke up, I walked over here, and that's when I saw your sign, Imperial Transarctic Expedition. And I figured I had a premonition.
Now Shackleton is sure he likes Frank Worsley. The man clearly has a vivid imagination. His energy will be good for the crew. He tells Shackleton he's been sailing since he was 16 years old and spent years in the Royal Navy Reserve. Perfect. There's only one question left to ask. Shackleton leans forward.
How did your dream end? We made it safely to the pub, sir. Had a few pints.
Shackleton laughs. He stands up and offers Worsley his hand.
Congratulations, Skipper. You're hired.
As Worsley ducks out of the office into the morning light, Shackleton sits back down at his desk. He still has work to do. He has an eye on a whaling ship called the Polaris. The owner's in debt. He's hoping he can get it cheap. It'll need some retrofits, but it's going to be beautiful. He already has a name for it, the Endurance. It's part of his family motto. By endurance, we conquer. Henry Worsley paces outside the Fox and Hounds pub. It's early in the evening, March 2004, and the London air is beginning to chill. But Henry hardly notices. He's nervous. Inside, two people are waiting for him. People who can change his fate. He pulls out an old, worn copy of Ernest Shackleton's book on his attempt at the South Pole. He flips to a passage he's read many times. The reason for Shackleton's quest for adventure. To explore parts unknown. He reads it quietly to himself.
Men go out into the void spaces of the world for various reasons. Some for the love of adventure, some for scientific knowledge, and others are drawn away from the trodden paths by the lure of little voices, the mysterious fascination of the unknown. Those little voices called to Henry the first time he saw the photographs in Shackleton's Endurance book, taken by the great Frank Hurley. He was mesmerized by the black and white image of what looked like a ghost ship in the middle of a no man's sea, surrounded by towering ice. Since then, Henry's been obsessed with Ernest Shackleton. Who would dare to try and conquer the South Pole? And failing at that, plan an even bigger mission. What is a man like that made of? Henry has been in the British Army most of his life. He's even had a few close calls, but he's never been tested by anything like Antarctica. If he had the chance to traverse the great continent, could he be as decisive? Could he be as optimistic in the face of danger? With any luck, he'll be offered that chance today. He peers through the foggy pub window and sees Shackleton's granddaughter sitting at a table. No more time to waste. He enters the pub and walks past the wood-paneled bar to a round foretop where two people are waiting. Alexandra, it's so nice to see you again. Oh, please, call me Zaz. I'm glad you could come. Meet Wilgo. Will is a great-grandnephew of my grandfather by marriage, which makes us what, Will? Step-cousins? Will laughs and gets to his feet to shake Henry's hand. He's stocky and short with a boxer's build. His round face is warm and inviting. I've told Will all about you, Henry, how you are related to the great Frank Worsley, the Endurance captain, and that you know almost as much about my grandfather as I do. I must say, so does Will. Henry met Zaz when attending lectures on Shackleton and at various auctions. He told her how much he admired Shackleton and how he had dreamed of visiting the Antarctic. When Henry sits down, he and Will hit it off immediately. Will dreamed about going to Antarctica too. He wanted to follow in Shackleton's footsteps to reach the South Pole. Will's blue eyes twinkle as he tells Henry about his plan. The centennial of Shackleton's attempt at the South Pole is just a few years away. I want to recreate that mission with descendants from the Nimrod expedition. It will be a celebration, but it's also unfinished family business. I want to try and go the whole way. It's the opportunity Henry's been looking for his entire life. The two men huddle together as Will explains what they'll need. He wants to find two descendants to go with them, to equal the number of men on the Nimrod trip. And they'll need money. Expeditions like these aren't cheap, but he has some ideas for fundraising. And of course, they'll need training. You can't just drop into the Antarctic and trek 800 miles across the frozen tundra in 50 below temperature and expect to succeed. The trip may still be almost 5 years away, but the sooner, the better. It's August 3rd, 1914. Ernest Shackleton sits on the veranda of the Cliffside Hotel, staring down at his ship docked far below. How could everything right have gone so wrong in just 2 short days? His ship, the Endurance, is more beautiful than he ever thought was possible. It's made of solid oak and Norwegian fir, fashioned by the best shipbuilders in all of Norway. The owner fell on hard times, and Shackleton got it for a steal. Originally, it was designed for luxury Arctic hunting trips. There were passenger cabins, a smoking room, and a dining room. Of course, he had all that ripped out when the ship got to London. He needed room to store cargo, equipment, and supplies. Food for the men for 6 months would take up a lot of space alone, and he's got 69 Canadian sled dogs coming with them. Then there's the boats. He has 4 in all, 2 rowing cutters and a larger whaling boat and a small motorboat to make fast trips to the shore. Frank Worsley, his captain, drew up the designs for that one himself.
but it's the bow that's the real prize. It has to plow through the heavy ice chunks and take them straight on. It's made of a single oak tree and shaped around the curves of the ship. The Endurance sailed from London 2 days ago, along with his 28 crew members. A crowd of hundreds saw them off. All of his men were grinning from ear to ear, waving their hats. None of them had ever been a part of anything like this, the last great polar journey that can be made. It's enough to make a man sentimental. The only thing clouding the trip were rumors of war with Germany. It ate at Shackleton when they docked in Southend, and when they landed here in Margate, his gut told him to get off the ship and see what news he could find out. He picks up the paper. England will declare war this evening. British naval reserves mobilized. This means the entire trip is in jeopardy. His conscience tells him he can't leave now. Not when his country needs every man and boat. But he's torn. He spent everything he had on this venture and mortgaged his future. He owes his financial backers vast sums of money. Money he hoped to make back on his return. There's no guarantee that they will get this chance again. Not with this crew, these supplies. He needs to make a decision. With a heavy heart, he walks back along the dock to the Endurance. The sun glints off her majestic black sides. When he boards the ship, he asks Frank Worsley to call the men together. They're quiet. They've heard the rumors, too. Shackleton removes his hat. Gentlemen, I need your approval. I would like to telegraph the Admiralty and offer up the Endurance and the entire expedition to the government. I know you have put in hard work to get here, but Britain's at war. What do you say? The crew is silent for a moment, and then, man by man, every one of them agrees. Send the telegram, sir. We are with you. Shackleton nods his head. He wouldn't have expected any less from these men. 3 hours later, a messenger clatters up to the ship on the bicycle. He's out of breath. Sir Shackleton, I have a telegram from the First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill himself. Shackleton opens the wire and reads it aloud to his men. Sir Shackleton, thank you for your generous offer. However, we desire that the expedition, which is sanctioned by the scientific and geographical societies, continue to Antarctica as planned. And just like that, the last great polar journey is back on.
Looking to upgrade your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices? Well, Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they have all the staples. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings to you. I recently ordered their featherless quilted long puffer jacket in the color olive, and I'm looking forward to having a little variety in my wardrobe with this gorgeous color. I feel like this puffer would be super expensive anywhere else. You can't really beat the quality, price, and style of Quince's clothing. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/theodds for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/theodds to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/theodds.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. Get unparalleled access to job seekers with over 350 million monthly unique visitors globally, according to Indeed data, and an extended reach through Glassdoor. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, so their matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. So fast that in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/theodds. Just go to Indeed.com/theodds right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/theodds. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's April 2006, and 3 degrees above zero on Baffin Island, Canada. Henry Worsley strains to drag a 100-pound sled through the snow. It's strapped to his chest by a harness, and every step forward, he can feel the weight of the sled crushing his shoulders. He's going to be sore. It's all part of the extreme polar training course he and Will enrolled in to help them prepare for their South Pole trip. It's led by the legendary polar guide, Maddie McNair, who has taken a special interest in their expedition. They have two other team members with them, both great-grandsons of the youngest member of Shackleton's Nimrod crew. The team is spread out across the course, breathing hard. Their shins are scraped raw from chunks of broken ice hidden by fresh snow. He turns around and yells back to Will. "How are you doing? Shouldn't we all be together?" But Will is too far back. He can't hear him. Henry's glad to finally be an official member of the team, though since he and Will first met, the planning has been slow. Yes, they have monthly meetings, but the goals are scattershot. They research possible sponsors and then re-research again. There was a rope work class that they took with one of Henry's buddies one weekend, but the only thing they learned was how much they didn't know. Henry pulls off his goggles to wipe them down. The reflection from the sun bouncing off the snow pierces his eyes. Snow blindness. Something Shackleton talked about on all of his trips. He needs to be careful. When Henry's teammates catch up, they look at each other's sleds. This is bad. One of the sleds has all of the heaviest items strapped on the back. Others have the heavier items in the front. If they can't even learn simple tasks like packing sleighs, they're never going to be able to drag them up thousands of feet of ice. The men ski back to camp. Maddie is there waiting with her arms crossed. She doesn't look happy. She waves them over. "Come on, guys, let's get into the tent. Who wants to start the cook stove?" Henry volunteers. Maddie starts assessing their progress. "What would you say went wrong today?" There's an uncomfortable silence. Finally, Henry speaks up. "We packed the sleds inefficiently. We also misread that navigation." Adams jumps in. "And we're still skiing too slow. We won't make our goal unless we speed it up." Adams is the youngest and most fit of the four. Henry met him at the airport for the first time when they arrived. His enthusiasm for the trip is almost as big as Henry's. Henry liked him on sight. Suddenly, the tent fills with an odd smell. "The cooker, it's burning!" They completely forgot they turned on the cooker, and now the food is on fire. Adams and Will rush to douse the flame with snow. Maddie laughs at the chaos, but then she turns serious. "Guys, these little things are bigger than you think. Lighting a stove might seem tedious, but you can't cut corners when you're out there. Not on this. Not on pitching your tents correctly or preparing your food. The beauty of the Antarctic will seduce you, but you have to stay alert and look out for each other." Henry knows she's right. He's read how prepared Shackleton was for his missions. The explorer had some crazy ideas, but he had other team members to balance him out, and he knew it. Maddie's voice interrupts. "There's something else you need to think about. You need to figure out your strengths and your weaknesses. Teamwork is everything out there. You have to know yourself and your teammates better than you know anyone. It's the only way you'll survive. Now, who's the lead here?" It's the same question that's been bugging Henry. Shackleton was a great leader of men, but for their expedition,
It's still not clear who is in charge, and it's taking a toll. It's hard to build trust, and everyone is frustrated. Even Will. Something has to change. When Maddie leaves, Henry asks Will if he can speak to him alone. It's going to be a hard conversation, but he has to do it. Henry chooses his words carefully. I know this whole thing was your idea, your dream. You've pulled the team together, and no one can ever take that away. But things aren't progressing the way they should. The lack of direction could ruin this entire expedition. Unless you hand the reins to someone else, I think I'm going to withdraw from the team. Henry watches the emotions play on Will's face. There's confusion and anger, then sadness. This is his baby, his vision. Finally, he responds. I know what you mean, but that doesn't mean I like it. I'll have to think about it. That night, Henry doesn't sleep well. This could be his only chance at the pole. When he wakes up, Will is already in the cook tent making coffee. From the dark circles under his eyes, Henry can tell he hasn't slept much either. You're right, Henry. Someone needs to be in charge. You have more experience than I do. You can take the lead. Henry is moved. It's a huge gesture. The two shake hands. When Will leaves the tent, Henry sits down alone and thinks about how they're going to pull this off in the next 2 years. There's still so much to do. They'll need a fundraising committee. He wants to meet with experts, people who have done this before. And training, more training. A dress rehearsal in Greenland. He's going to plot Shackleton's route from end to end. Note the problem spots. It's up to him to be the team's Shackleton now. Ernest Shackleton peers down at the small brass compass in his hand. It's November 5th, 1914. They left Buenos Aires 9 days ago. They should reach the whaling station soon. It's their final stop before the 1,000-mile push to Antarctica. So far, it's been easy sailing. The waters have been kind. The crew even spotted a few whales in the calm seas. A sign of luck, he thinks. In the distance, Shackleton sees South Georgia Island rising up and out of the blue sea. They plan to dock at Grytviken, a small whaling town there. There, Shackleton hopes to get news from the local whaling skippers about conditions on the sea. As they pull into port, they are greeted by a quaint scene through the hazy light. Under the shadow of an ice-capped mountain, a few small fishing huts dot the rocky shore. It's a beautiful place to stop. Frank Worsley nudges him. Put the compass away, boss. You'll need that hand for drinks. Shackleton laughs. We're not even on shore yet, Skipper. Let's wait to see what the locals say about the ice in the Weddell Sea. Shackleton doesn't have to wait long. Within a day, the manager of the whaling station invites him and his crew to dinner at his home. The crew is in good spirits, filling their bellies with fresh mackerel and rum. They exchange sailing stories with the whaling boat captains. One of the older skippers leans over to Shackleton. What are your plans? I know the waters. Maybe I can help. That's what I was hoping for. He tells the man the crew plans to head east through the South Sandwich Island group, and then south along the Antarctic coast to Vassal Bay. We want to go ashore by the end of December. Then we're on foot. That's when the journey really begins. The skipper frowns. The ice in the Weddell Sea is never easy. But this year is the worst, I remember. Other whalers chime in. There's no ice floe movement in the island chains. Palmer Peninsula is packed up tight, too. There hasn't been enough wind to take the ice floes away from the land. It's bad. The station master interrupts. Don't even try. Wait until next season. But Shackleton can't wait. It's taken 3 years and everything he has to get there. If they go back now, he and his men will join up with the war efforts. It could be years until they get this chance again. He confers with his second-in-command, Frank Wild. Wild was with him on the Scott expedition and on the Nimrod. He's known for his level head. The expedition means almost as much to him as it does to Shackleton. They decide to wait a few more weeks, see if the winds pick up and the weather turns. They can get more coal as backup fuel if they run into anything rough, but no matter what, they're going. Shackleton leans in to speak to Wild.
Tell the crew we'll set sail December 5th. Rain or shine.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's October 2008. After months of training and countless hours of fundraising, the end is in sight. It took 2.5 years, but the money has been raised. Bags are packed. Henry Worsley clinks his glass of champagne with his two expedition partners, Will Gow and Henry Adams. Can you believe we're finally doing this? I started to believe it 6 months in when I realized every other word coming out of my mouth was Shackleton or Nimrod. They're standing in the offices of the Matrix Group, a financial services company that's the primary sponsor of the trip. They are throwing them a farewell party. The waiters walk through the crowd in buttoned-up shirts, offering up bite-sized canapés from a silver tray. It's a little fancy, given soon they'll be dining on energy bars, but Henry is proud they're able to thank their families and supporters in style. Henry stares out of the tall windows at the blinking lights of London's fashionable West End. Soon he'll be across the world, thousands of miles away from civilization. His wife, Joanna, nudges him. Penny for your thoughts? Oh, just thinking that in 2 weeks, I won't see anything but snow and ice. Still sure you don't want to come? You know I hate being cold, but I'll be here with the kids and we'll be cheering you on every day. I'm sorry this venture has taken me away so much. Joanna laughs. Bloody Shackleton, right? But we're proud of you. Bloody Shackleton is what Henry's kids have started calling this trip. He spent almost every waking minute of the last 2 years since taking over as team leader, obsessing over the details. He sent all of his sponsors handwritten thank you letters, pored over maps, and took part in 2 more training sessions, including a trial run in Greenland. But they're ready. Dave Cornell waves at Henry from across the room. Dave was supposed to be the 4th member of the expedition, but had to drop out of the 800-mile trek for family reasons. But he stayed on to help raise funds. He'll fly in and meet them at the 97-mile mark on January 9th, the date and point where Shackleton's crew turned back. He'll be with 4 others, including another descendant, Tim Freight. His great-grandfather was Shackleton's second-in-command on the Endurance. He was also with him on the Nimrod expedition. Together, they'll go the rest of the way to the South Pole and finish what their ancestors started. Dave points to the man next to him, one of the sponsors whose company custom-made all of their clothes. Henry shakes the man's hand. Thank you for everything. We are so grateful. I'm sure it was annoying to have to add an extra inch to all of our pockets, but it will come in handy. Not at all. When do you leave? We fly out tomorrow. First stop is Chile, and then we'll head to Cape Royds in Antarctica. That's where Shackleton and his men started their march to the South Pole. Our goal is to get there October 29th, same day they began 100 years ago. And then, with any luck, we'll get to the 97th mile mark on January 9th. Henry Adams, the third expedition partner, laughs. And you can be sure that Henry knows exactly how fast we need to go to make it there on time. Henry has spent hours calculating how fast his team has to go to reach their goal. They'll need to average between 10 and 12 nautical miles a day. But he knows no matter how solid a plan you make, anything can go wrong out there. Weather, injuries, the unexpected. Just look at the Endurance. They're interrupted by the tinkling sounds of forks on glasses. In the front of the room, Shackleton's granddaughter Zaz is holding up a glass, proposing a toast. As many of you know, I have a number of my grandfather's belongings. Some are pieces he carried with him on the very trip the men here today are going to undertake 100 years later. And so I thought it only fitting Henry Worsley, the team leader, should have one of those pieces for his journey. Henry, you want to come up? When Zaz hands him a small box, Henry suddenly feels shy. And then he opens it, and the crowd fades away. It's a brass compass, not much bigger than an old coin. He clicks open the face. Inside are three letters scratched by hand. EHS. Ernest Henry Shackleton. Henry swallows the lump in his throat as a hush falls over the room. Carrying this compass to the South Pole will be a great honor. Thank you, Zaz. Shackleton never made it to the South Pole with the compass he's holding. Now, it's up to Henry and his team to take it there. He holds it up for the partygoers to see. May this compass direct us safely. Cheers, everyone. But Henry knows it's not just the compass that will take them through their journey. The most important direction will have to come from him. It's just after 9 a.m. on December 5th. Ernest Shackleton shivers and wraps a scarf around his face as a mix of drizzle and snow falls on his back. Everything around him is gray. The clouds, the snow, even the sea is the color of lead. But nothing can diminish Shackleton's good spirits. They're finally sailing off into the Weddell Sea on their way to Antarctica. He turns to Frank Worsley, the captain of the Endurance. Set an early course toward the South Sandwich Islands, Skipper. Yes, boss. If all goes as planned, he hopes to be on the continent by the end of the month. Shackleton walks to the front of the ship to get a better view. When he reaches the bow, he peers out toward the horizon. He's looking for icebergs. They should be easy enough to push through or get around, but he wants to be prepared. Frank Worsley joins him on the deck. Have you ever seen an iceberg before, Skipper? Not this far south, I haven't. The ones down here are majestic, massive. They ride the swells of the ocean like a mighty ship. When the waves crash against their sides, it almost looks like the white cliffs of Dover. Now that sounds like a sight. On the third day, Shackleton gets a look at the first iceberg heading toward the ship. It's broken up in small tabletop chunks, and the Endurance easily finds a way past. As they sail, Shackleton marvels at the beauty. It's even more incredible than he remembers it. They thread their way past icebergs taller than the Endurance herself. They pass by a bright yellow glow of phytoplankton that have attached to the icy cliffs. 2 hours later, they come across a massive raft of ice laying low in the sea. It's at least a half mile wide and several feet thick. This is the Antarctic pack ice the whalers warned him about. It's further north than Shackleton expected. It's too dangerous to try and push through, so they search for a way around. It takes them nearly 12 hours of skirting the edges to find an opening. It's an ominous sign of what may lie south. But then they're through and on their way again. By Christmas, it's summer in Antarctica, and the sun barely dips below the horizon before it rises again.
Sunset and sunrise blur together, making twilight last for hours. There's a stillness in the atmosphere that's uncanny. The freezing air is filled with tiny, delicate crystals that float to the ground in a twinkling cascade, making the crew appear as if they were surrounded by fireflies. They watch as whales as long as their ship thrust their snouts above the water and flip their tails between the ice floes. The crew especially love the penguins. They toboggan along the icebergs to keep pace with the ship, squawking at the sailors. On January 9th, they pass close to a berg so splendid they give it a name, the Rampart. It's twice as high as the mast of the ship. As they pass close, they can see the base dropping deep into the aqua blue sea at least 1,000 feet down. It takes their breath away. It's the adventure they all came for. The awe on the men's faces matches Shackleton's own. One of the crew says quietly, "I never knew how much life is out there. I always assumed Antarctica would be nothing but snow." It's slow going, but by mid-January, they're within 200 miles of Vossel Bay. Shackleton claps Worsley on the back. "With any luck, we'll be there in less than 2 weeks." But then the weather takes a turn. First, the wind shifts in direction, blowing in gusts, but soon it builds to a gale force. Dense wet snow fills the air around the ship. When they run into a thick pack of ice, they are able to push through. But beyond it, there's another pack, this one even bigger. The surface is filled with wide white chunks. Some pieces are nearly a mile long. Others are smaller and bump up and jostle against each other. The Endurance shakes as it pushes through each piece of ice. The men share anxious glances at one another. Shackleton instructs Worsley to look for patches of open ocean, something to navigate towards.
"Captain, there!"
Sure enough, there's a small patch of sea a few hundred feet out. Going is so slow. It takes nearly 2 days to find an open path to get through. When they emerge, they find themselves on a thin strip of water surrounded by ice. It's a different kind of ice from anything they've ever encountered. The floes are thick but soft, filled with lumps of snow and mush. It's like pudding soup, too thick to get through. The wind pushes another thick ice floe directly behind the ship. It's closing in like polar quicksand. It's everywhere. Shackleton's voice pierces the air.
"Full speed ahead. Push her through."
But the ice doesn't budge. Shackleton turns to Worsley. "We'll just waste time and energy trying to push out of this. Better to wait till the wind dies down. The ice pack will have to split open eventually. Then we'll push through." They settle in and wait for the winds to calm, but they don't. So they wait some more. The days are endlessly cloudy and gray. The cold bites through their jackets. The sound of the gales and the cracking ice drives the dogs mad. The men grow restless. Shackleton tries to keep them entertained by teaching them bridge. He even lets them win. But every few hours, someone jumps up from the table and clatters up to the stairs to look off the deck and reports back to the group. "Still nothing but ice." And then on January 24th, the wind breaks. A crack in the ice appears 150 feet ahead of the bow. It's their chance. Shackleton orders the men to raise all the sails and fire the engine again. For 3 hours, they push, but the ice is stronger than the Endurance. They barely move a few inches. The whalers had warned him, but Shackleton didn't think it was possible for the ice to be this bad. He's never seen anything like it. Ahead of them, a plateau of frozen white ice spreads out as far as the eye can see. No force on Earth can break through this many miles of ice. They're prisoners. How will they ever get out?
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Against the Odds ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. This is the first episode of our 5-part series, Endurance, Surviving Antarctica. A quick note about our scenes. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said, but everything is based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about this event, we recommend the books Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing, South by Sir Ernest Shackleton himself, and In Shackleton's Footsteps by Henry Worsley. Henry Worsley and his team also created the Shackleton Foundation to support inspirational leaders looking to help disadvantaged young people. For more information, go to www.shackletonfoundation.org. I'm your host, Cassie DePeckel. Anthony Del Call wrote this episode. Our editors are Matt Wise and Maura Waltz. Our consultants are Chris Turney and Tim Freight. Brian White is our associate producer. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design is by Joe Richardson, with music by Isabel Hirschman. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.